Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everyone. This is Janine, and you are on Lunch with Loudon. Thanks so much for joining us today. For those of you already in chat and already listening, I want to remind you that our call-in number is 646-929-2495. And our topic today is one very near and dear to my heart, women's history, women's future. If you read our email blast or our blog post today, you know that I feel very strongly that 100 years from now, we may look back at today and see the power of money in politics, whether it's Citizens United, groups like ALEC or AUL, the Americans United for Life, and candidate addiction to mega contributions as one giant step backwards for womankind. We're able to have this conversation today because of the wonders of blog talks, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Nation Builder, Google Plus, you name it, the way we roll today in Coffee Party USA. I forgot Scoop It. Let's never forget Scoop It. Be the media. This is our chance for us all to come together and be the media for one another. I also want to point out or remind our listeners that Coffee Party USA embraces a concept called the Civility Pledge, and that means we speak to each other using inspiration, yes, but always empowering, positive, say your piece clearly and without denigration for anyone, and we'll have a great conversation if we all adhere to that today. But before we get started, I want to say hello to my co-pilot and ever-trusted companion, Debbie Lynn Molyneux in Portlandia. How are you, Debbie Lynn?
Hey there, Janine. I'm doing great today. And looking forward to this conversation that we started on Facebook, and looking forward to having some callers call in today and talk with us and our guests about women's issues, and you know, one of the topics, of course, that's near and dear to our hearts.
Exactly. And before we introduce our guests, I just want to say one more thing, which is, if there's any doubt in anyone's mind that this is a coffee party issue, let me be clear. The issue for coffee party here is that the campaign funders are obviously speaking more loudly to our elected than people are, than the voters are, than the citizens are. And when you go to any statistical research of any credibility, what you'll see is what's happening in state legislatures all over the country today does not really reflect what we the people say we want. And so we'll talk today about how that mischief, that financial mischief, is coming to play. And one of the places we're going to point to right off the bat is how the sequester, which is, I think, the ultimate legislative failure possible, how the sequester has affected women, children, and families. So without further ado, Debbie Lynn, would you introduce our guest?
I would love to introduce our guest. So today we have with us Pedro Elias, and he's the Director of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood Marmonte, which is a branch of Planned Parenthood in Central California. He's been there since July of 2011. Prior to that, he worked in the Education Department at Planned Parenthood Marmonte since 2000. So he's coordinated the Male Involvement Program for the agency and his work in engaging young men to be more responsible in their lives and the actions that they take. So he's been nationally recognized for his work with men in Planned Parenthood. He has a long list of achievements prior to that, but I really want to just say thank you for all the work you've done with men, for your work that you're doing on behalf of women, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone.
Well, I'm so pleased that we actually have a man here representing Planned Parenthood. I think... we're blowing everybody's stereotype right out of the water. And so thank you so much for joining us.
I know
that one of the things you're interested in, Pedro, and our student, is the consequences of the sequester. And I'd love to hear your thinking on that matter.
Well, and just to give you a little bit, and one of the reasons I decided to leave the program I was previously coordinating to come to this position was to advocate for women's health and men's health in general, was to be able to speak out and educate legislators and inform legislators of the importance of access to reproductive health and how that's important in our communities, due to the need of information within our communities as well. And so, in order to do that, I needed to be able to at least share this information so that we can continue to have programs out in the communities. Because if we don't have advocacy and we don't have anyone speaking out and sharing and developing legislation, then we can't have programs out in our communities. So this is one of the reasons why I came here, as well as to speak out for my two daughters. I have two daughters and a son, and they're still under the age of five, and I'm figuring out a lot of things as a dad, the importance of fatherhood now, and the importance of allowing for my daughters, or fighting for my daughters to have the right to access the health care that they need, more importantly, reproductive health care. Going back to your question, I do want to mention that the there's programs that are being exempt from, sequestration spending cuts, such as Medicaid and CHIP, TANF, and SNAP. However, other women's health programs will now face sharp funding reductions. For example, very important program and dear to many of us is includes the Title X program, as well as the sexually transmitted infections program and sex education programs, which do a lot of great things out in the community because they allow for folks that do not have, the means to pay for their own insurance or their medical insurance, then these are safety nets for them. And losing this money and up to a 9% reduction in that, it has a huge impact on our states on a national level.
Yes. For our listeners who don't know, do you want to expand on what Title X means?
So Title X is a federal family planning funds that go out to states that are available for states, and states receive this Title X funding to help prevent pregnancies, help prevent sexually transmitted infections, and they're really focused on reproductive health and family planning. These funds are, and for every dollar that the state, for example, here in California, for every dollar we spend in family planning, we get $9 back from the federal government. So many times the misconception is that we're spending money to preventing pregnancies and it's not going anywhere. The thing is that we are making money from it. We are getting money back. There is funding coming back to continue to provide these services, and which is very, very important. For example, in California, over 60% of the counties in California are rural counties. And this is what we want to this is one of the reasons we want to address this and keep this program in California. And there's another program that's also called Family Pact in California that we also has also been very beneficial for the state.
Well, I do think that's an interesting thing for people to point out is that when women's health care, when women's and children's health care becomes less supported by tax dollars, the people that lose out first are those in the smallest communities who, you know, the people that we like to call, oh, this is the heartland, this is real America. You know what I'm saying? It's like on the one hand, they call this the real, you know, real America. And on the other hand, it's quote unquote real America that's the first to be abandoned in these kind of efforts. And so because the tax base out there is very, very, very low. And I think the outreach to people there is probably even more important than it is other places, but not that it's not important everywhere. Do you see this all? What I keep asking people, what is it we're seeing reflected by this kind of legislation, by this kind of inaction, by this kind of, it feels like collateral damage sort of circumstance. What do you think's happening there really?
Well, what we're seeing is that there is, I mean, the cuts have already occurred over the last years. Obviously, with more cuts, it's going to have an additional impact to what to the impact that's already occurred. And really, this illustrates exactly why our country needs Congress to take a balanced approach to deficit reduction. You know, that protects, you know, crucial investments in programs such as women's health services. Our nation's fiscal situation needs serious attention, of course, but that's why we want to make sure we urge Congress to act quickly and to address it. And you know, a balanced solution will not be found in cutting, you know, Americans' access to healthcare. I think we can definitely. The reality is that family planning services does save money, and that's a fact. You know, it has, you know, it's long been demonstrated, obviously, that for, you know, like I mentioned, for every dollar of public money invested in family planning, nearly $4 is saved in regards to that. And then also during our current economic climate, we know that cost effective family planning services like affordable access to birth control are more important than ever right now. And as we're moving forward with implementation in some states of the Affordable Care Act.
Right, right. And I also think that people sometimes don't realize how entwined general women's health services are with reproductive health services. In other words, there are portions of rural Big Island, which I'm familiar with, that virtually if there were not a women's health clinic that received these kinds of benefits, there would be no health clinic, period. And so this is how people get their annual exams. It's how they get their mammograms. It's how they have their blood tests done. It's how they know their if their diabetes is under control. It's not just about, you know, whether or not someone is going to have birth control, but certainly it's also their access to prescriptions for birth control. And so do you see that in your 60% rural California, the same phenomena that women's health clinics are the health clinics in some of these communities?
Well, yes, we do see that a lot. And myself, growing up in a rural area of Fresno County, within the farm working community, it was difficult just getting to a health center. You know, we didn't have the transportation that large cities have. I mean, the closest health center that anyone in that community could get to was 20 minutes away on a vehicle, you know. Otherwise, you know, having access to just to get to that only family planning health center that was the health center for the community was a challenge in itself at the time, and it still is. And then one of the other challenging things is that we also are finding in these rural counties that the community is not accessing the services as a result of knowing folks that work there, that maybe there's someone else in the community that works there, and therefore confidentiality is not going to be the priority of that staff member in that health center. So that puts another barrier to access in regards to regards to confidentiality and the community accessing those services. That's just one of the things, but it is something that we are seeing is that it is difficult to access this. But at this and the other part I wanted to mention is also, as you stated, it's not only for birth control, but it does help for women to access some of these other checkups that they might need. But we're also seeing the effects of this because of the early birth rate, where children are being born sooner, and so that also can be affected as well, where early pregnancies may occur as well. Early birth rate.
Right, which is never a good thing.
Right.
You can have all the money in the world and have difficulty with premature birth.
Prematurity.
That is certainly a problem. And now, so is there anything going on? One of the things we want to talk about in the show today and want to encourage callers to call and let us know about is, are there actions or activities going on in your neck of the woods where people can become involved and participate in supporting women's health care issues? Anything going on down there that Planned Parenthood is planning or other groups?
Well, on a national level, with Planned Parenthood affiliates throughout the nation are celebrating Women's History Month. We're actually have titled it through our, at least here locally, we've titled it Women's History Month. And we're working with, campus clubs, college campus clubs, for example, if there's a club on campus that is willing to take on some of these activities, and so we're implementing some of these activities through the college campus to inform students of the need of to take action or just to inform them. And I think what I found out in working with clubs on campus is that students don't have enough information. They want the information, and once they have it, they'll take action. And that's what I've learned from doing certain activities. One of the things folks can go onto their Planned Parenthood websites locally if they don't know the name of their affiliate. They can log on, and the name of their local affiliate will come up. We are collaborating also. Because we don't do it alone. We're doing it with other organizations, community-based organizations as well. We're teaming up with others. And it may vary in different states, but we are moving forward with celebrating this very important month with acknowledging the fact that we have to continue to, move forward with our agenda and make the community aware of the need for reproductive health and access in our communities.
Oh, precisely. I think involving young people is key to the success of any political effort or community movement. And I think that young people today, I'm kind of sorry that we're having to do this again. I'm old enough to remember having done this before and, been through these, had to jump through these hoops and take these stands for women's health. I have one more question, but I want to remind callers, our number is 646-929-2495, and you can call in, and we have Pedro for a few more minutes, and so we could certainly, if you have a question for him, please hit 1 when you call in, and you'll be in the host caller queue, or if you have a question in chat, Debbie Lynn can move your chat questions and bring them live on Blog Talk today. So the last thing I wanted to ask you was, where do we go from here? I mean, we know that last year was like a record year for legislative, I call it mischief. I don't want people to underestimate what I mean by mischief because I don't think it's legitimate activity, so I think it's mischievous activity in terms of women health and state legislatures all across the country, and some, of course, in our Congress. I'm wondering what you see the most effective thing for us to do as people with this interest to do in our own states to forward the action in terms of women's health care.
Well, what it seems like, and as you stated, I wasn't born, prior to the Supreme Court's decision of Roe versus Wade, and that's why to me it's still important because I've learned to understand the need that there is a need. There's a need because there is the lack of access in different areas of the country, lack of access even to birth control, has an impact. But I think where we want to move now is to have a discussion. I mean, we understand, that there is going to be, there's two sides to everything, but the most important thing is that we can start coming to an understanding or an agreement that there is a need, we are going to be available to assist, to inform folks in our communities in regards to women's health. And, for example, we just, passed the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, and as you stated, we're seeing different opposition in different states, and we want to make sure that we in some way somehow we will be able to come to an agreement where we will be able to move forward and look past this. And obviously, that might not be the case anytime soon. But I think where we go from here is to continue to just inform our legislators and continue to keep the community informed of the facts, of medically accurate information. And if we have that opportunity within our communities, we'll continue to head in the right direction, as well as looking at the cost saving. I mean, I usually don't like to use money and put money as the sort of forefront of why it's important, but when it comes to this and where we are now as a country, that we are saving money if we're investing in family planning services.
Excellent. So I have a couple of callers. Can you hang on for a few more minutes, Pedro? And they may have
Sure.
a question for you. Excellent. So caller at 707, I'm bringing you live now, and caller at 620, you're next. Hi, you're on Lunch with Loudon, and who am I speaking to today?
Hi, this is Linda from Northern California.
Hi, Linda. Do you have a question for Pedro or just something you'd like to share today?
Well, I started to write the answers to your question. It's pretty general, but I do have a question for him, I guess. As far as the Affordable Care Act goes, I have been researching that a little bit because my son moved to a state that's one of the seven that unfortunately won't be getting the Medicaid expansion because they're not going to take the government money. And I was just wondering, with all the reading I've been doing, people that are low income, as far as I know myself, Planned Parenthood was the very first PAP I ever got. It was the very first birth control, everything. That's where I found certain health issues because nobody had ever checked any of that stuff. Because I was working at a sub shop, my first job, they don't offer insurance. Of course, we're talking back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, but, because I'm as old as you are, probably, or pretty close. My question is, the Affordable Care Act, is that going to help? I mean, I've been I know Planned Parenthood is constantly under attack. And I sign and do everything I can to counteract that kind of ignorance. And I was just wondering if the Affordable Care Act is going to help Planned Parenthood, because it can be like a general place for women to go to get access that are low income. Does that somehow streamline it or make it easier? I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Sure. What will happen is we're currently working with we're working to collaborate with different federally qualified health centers, also known as FQHCs, because as the Affordable Care Act begins to be implemented, they're going to get an increase of patients. And what we're looking at is being able to be there to take some of that load off of them in hopes that they're willing to work with us, to take some of those patients from them, and especially the patients that are there for reproductive health care, that we'd be able to see them. We offer primary care services in some of our health centers. And that's also what many affiliates throughout the nation are looking at, is to begin to offer primary healthcare services or general practice in their facility, so we can be there and be the folks that be the agency or health center that the community can continue to come and see and visit for their needs, and for the needs for their families, for their children. We are staying informed of that, so we can inform our patients. And as we move forward, the other thing that I wanted to mention is that we are also working in the advocacy part of it, is that introduce or present legislation and get support for legislation that's going to follow the mission of the Affordable Care Act, and to me that's prevention. And what I mean by that is, for example, here in California, we were able to pass a bill that now allows registered nurses to dispense birth control. And as I mentioned, many of the counties here in California are rural. Having a nurse or allowing a nurse to dispense birth control really sort of brings access to these different communities that lack physicians and service providers.
That's an excellent question, Linda, the connection between these two. And I believe that this varies from state to state. And Pedro, it sounds like you're capitalizing on this opportunity in California. Any other questions before we move to our next caller? I'm talking to you, Linda.
That was for me? Okay. I was just going to say, I live in Del Norte County, up at the very, very top, and it's very rural, and it has our tiny little clinic hospital, if you want to call it that, just went critical care, which means they lose beds, and they basically fly everybody out to another hospital if they're stable enough. So things like the Planned Parenthood and things like that, because there's a lot of low-income people here. It's very poor. We have a lot of beautiful scenery. It's all a lot of national parks, but there's no tax base in that. We have a lot of the issues he's talking about, and I really hope that, we can educate people. That's basically my main thing, is to educate people. That what they are hearing is wrong, and that's all I was going to say. No real questions. Just thank you for his service.
Well, and thank you for your call, Linda. We're moving now to area code 620. I'm opening that mic. Hi, you're on Lunch with Loudon.
Is this Jack Golding?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know, no questions for Peter. I just want to make some comments. Okay. All right, number one. That shouldn't even be an issue. These darn social issues that Republicans want to push about abortion and voters restriction and all that stuff, that shouldn't even be an issue. But there are these reactionary guys like, what's his name, Paul Ryan, and pushing to set the clock back about 100 years. Number two, I said my piece pretty much. And number two is I'm for you with this nonpartisan crap, nonpartisan in California. Okay, we've had I lived in California for 39 years. We've had a nonpartisan primary back in the 80s. And Barron Schwarzenegger, Governor Schwarzenegger, won the election. And they want to keep it.
So you're a believer in open primaries and open elections? Do you think that'll help in cases like this? Do you think it'll help us?
I think that will keep the lid off of these reactionary Tea Party guys. They won't be dominating like. And then the third thing is I want to say that is people are so afraid that they're going to be primaried in the Mitch McConnell and et cetera. They're going to be primaried, and worse yet, challenged by Ashley Judd.
That's a topic for another day, I'll tell you. That's a whole other conversation, isn't it, Jack? Always, I want to thank you for calling in. Our guest is at the end of his time, and I'd like to say goodbye.
Take care.
Jack, and if you want to say some more, raise your hand again, okay?
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, Jack. So, Pedro, I want to thank you very much. I know that we're at the end of our time with you. Is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners before I let you go?
Well, I want to say that, please continue to stay involved, stay connected. This is a great program. Again, just be well informed of what's out there. And if there's anything that Planned Parenthood can do for you, please don't hesitate to give us, look this up on the internet, go to our website and we have everything there for you in regards to, anything related to health and anything related to advocacy or information related to some of the themes of the months that we have throughout the year. So get involved.
Thank you. And on your behalf, I want to remind our listeners that one form of activism is to make financial contributions to, in Pedro's case, Planned Parenthood. It could be the national or local chapters. I'm a reliable donor to Southwest Oregon Planned Parenthood, and I encourage other people to, if you don't know what else to do, get on that donate page and help people like Pedro keep forwarding the action for women's reproductive health, women's health care, and basically taking care of all of us. So thank you so much, Pedro, for your time.
Thank you for your invitation. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. So, Debbie Lynn, quite a conversation with about how the sequester is impacting women's health, women's reproductive health, and a very gentle soul in terms of choosing not to point fingers, which I appreciate very much. Any other comments?
No, I appreciate Pedro's coming on the show with us and so appreciate his work in both with the Young Men's Program that he worked with previously and also his work with legislators in the education and dedication to, you know, to education. Because so much of this is about education, too. And,
well, and remember, go ahead.
I'm finished. Go.
Oh, sure. So remember when you and I went to the April rally at the state capitol, how many men were there? And
yes.
How many men were working for organizations in support of women's rights, women's
mm-hmm.
health, backing legislation of various kinds that were... So I was so pleased because when we were there in Salem, Oregon, there was a huge representation of men, and I took a lot of great images sort of so that when people want to bust out the notion that feminism is a women's issue only, I have art that shows that it's just not how we perceive ourselves. And the other thing I wanted to be sure, I don't know if any of our listeners can call in and talk about this, but there are two events near and dear to my heart that are going on right now. Obviously, March 8th, there's the rally at the United Nations in support of women's history, women's health, women's future. Remember, we're the title of this episode of Lunch with Loud News, Women's History, Women's Future. You know, where do we go from here and how?
Mm-hmm.
Also in Oregon, well, and they're supposedly, if you go to their website, you can see that there are mirror activities all over the country. In Oregon, on March 14th, all you geeks out there, that's Pi Day. And it's also one of my daughter's birthdays. But there's the rally.
And my mother's birthday, just, you know, just while we got it out there.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. It's a very good day. Anyway, there's a rally for women's health at the Capitol in Salem, Oregon. You can get online and check out the details. Interesting enough, there's an interesting hearing on gun legislation that same day. So I don't know what other groups we'll bump into, but I'll be there with bells on, and I'll be bringing my video recording equipment and participating fully in taking a stand for women's health issues in the state of Oregon. Frankly, go ahead.
And I just posted the link in the chat room for the National Women's History Project so people can link to that to see what's happening near them.
Excellent, excellent. And maybe we can find a couple of other links, for example, to the rally on the 14th. That would be
mm-hmm.
great. And any general, there's, I think it's PlannedParenthood.org is the one where you can sort of enter, find your Planned Parenthood and sort of, everything kind of spins off that website. So that's also a place to go to find information, both about activities. They've got a great women's history link there going, and also about services available to you. Another place you can find out about, I know there are many, but I just wanted to give a shout out to the League of Women Voters for their tenacity on tracking legislative activity not only at the national level, but in every state of the union. And so if you want to know what's going on in your state, whether it's about women's healthcare issues or about campaign finance reform or budget concerns, they cover everything. But they do a great job of sort of collecting together related legislation and giving you access to knowing the state of those bills, who's involved with them, and kind of tracking. In some cases, they have positions on issues, and they'll share very candidly their position with you. So the League of Women Voters is another organization that we can call upon because of their watchdog actions in all states. And I think that that's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And then
they're posted also in the chat room. It's lwv.org. And I missed one of the other ones. Was it 350.org that you said?
Uh-uh. I didn't say that one, but maybe.
Okay. I missed one that you said.
And so there's a lot of people who have called in who are not raising their hands, and I'm curious if they're just listening and or if they have something that they'd like to share. Certainly, I'm concerned about, not that I'm not concerned about the results of what's going on in legislatures across the state. What I'm more concerned about is the process. You know, I sort of envision a process where people can actually take off their NASCAR jacket, you know, the one that reflects who's funding their campaign, and actually step forward, listen to their constituents, and come together in a meaningful conversation about how do we handle this and any other issue in the United States of America, or at least the America we seek. And,
I do have a couple of suggestions from the chat room here. You know, Bob and Joe in the chat room have been talking about, you know, we did get the Senate version of the Violence Against Women Act passed rather than the scaled back, less friendly version of that the House was proposing.
Oh, yes. Yay. We partied that day, Debbie Lynn. We had imaginary cosmos over the phone.
That's right, we did. And I think that's, you know, that's the way we did. Actually, our show on February 14th was dedicated to the Violence Against Women Act. So, and we talked about V-Day. So, you know, 3 weeks ago we were talking about this specific legislative piece. And so, you know, I think we should celebrate that.
Yes, it was a huge victory. And part of what was odd to me about that whole drama was how much posturing was going on, you know. And I just feel like, you know, it's kind of like circus dogs waiting for treats. All this posturing, and in the end, we did have the vote. And you have to wonder how much many campaign donations, though, got generated by all that posturing, you know. And it's the same thing with the Affordable Care Act. We have all this posturing about my state's not going to take the money and I'm not going to do this and I'm not going to do that. Well, in the end, they're all peeling off like the skin on an onion, and people will take this money and they will make that step forward in terms of providing sort of ubiquitous or march toward providing ubiquitous health care for Americans.
Right.
And so it's kind of the political theater.
Well, and how much of this brinksmanship is all about, you know, getting campaign contributions in?
I know. Yeah. And it's all using, you know, first give me the code word, triggers the talking point. The talking point generates the angst and the them and us thinking. And then where are we? We're not making decisions at all. We're sequestered. You know, the formula is tiresome at this point. And I think that...
it's so tiresome.
Yeah, right. And, you know, Rachel Maddow did a great piece a few weeks ago about how boring and predictable and unmanageable stalemate is. I don't think the framers of our Constitution envisioned a government of stalemates and standoffs and smarty-pants gaming, you know, when it comes to issues as important as this. And one of the things that Coffee Party is launching, a project called the Leadership 535 Project, and we'll be announcing it soon. As a matter of fact, if you're on our virtual town hall on Blog Talk Radio this coming Sunday at, what time is that, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific. With Annabelle Park and Eric Weiler. The subject of that virtual town hall is about election, you know, taming elections, election reform. And I think that there's a lot to be said, especially in the women's health issue, about the need for election reform. I mean, frankly, the Americans United for Life, who is the powerhouse behind a lot of the anti-choice legislation, has been around since the 70s. but was not a force to be reckoned with until Citizens United.
Right.
All right. I see that we have another hand raised. Yay. I'm coming to area code 610. The mic should be open now. Hi, this is Janine. You're on Lunch with Loudon. Who am I talking to?
Hi, Janine. This is Bob from Pennsylvania.
Bob from
Bob
Pennsylvania. Yes. Welcome. And you have something to contribute to this conversation today, I think.
Oh, yes. I certainly do. The last bit I picked up, the same last bit you were talking about, Debbie Lynn was talking about campaign contributions and how they relate to the sequester and the negotiations.
Yes.
And that's a topic that's really very near and dear to my heart because just in the last couple of days I've been doing a lot of research, Googling to figure out what went on, what's going on with the sequester, what the bill that was passed says. It actually, it's all about campaign contributions. The week that Congress was off, going back to the districts instead of negotiating on the sequester, like the week they were the week before the vote was due, they weren't going back to talk to their constituents. They were going to talk to the big defense contractor lobbyists who laid their money down and told them what they needed to protect their clients' interests against this. So, and it turns out that not only did the Congress deliver on what they could of the lobbyist demands. In other words, the lobbyists who gave the biggest money in the defense industry were the ones that got what they wanted. So you saw when Congress gave the president more discretion as to how he could apply the cutbacks, the place where they told him not to cut back were the places where the lobbyists with the biggest checkbooks paid them for results.
Oh, so the exclusions? They created exclusions, yes.
They created exclusions, and yeah, the lobbyists were saying, well, look, if you're going to cut everything, our clients are going to be out of a job, are not going to be able to get government contracts, not be able to hire people, all that. So what we want you to do is tell President Obama to fund certain defense industries and not fund other ones. So reallocate the resources.
Right. Well,
and then, I'm sorry, go ahead. I have more. But
I just want to point out one thing. There's an article I just posted in chat, so you guys can follow it back, from NPR that says for every dollar spent on a lobbyist, a corporation.
$270.
$220 is in the NPR article. That's a 22,000% return for every dollar spent.
That's I saw that, and that's I think that's conservative, because most of the time I see about 1,000. If you look at what they gave and what they get, maybe 1,000 times. Anyhow, the other thing, it's very true, and that's the problem. And the other thing is, what nobody's talking about is the defense allocations for certain industries were actually raised, in spite of what the Congress said. They actually raised allocations for certain areas. Just took more money out of the budget by taking out a domestic program. They just reallocated to new defense programs, according to who gave the highest donation.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one more element that I found before, and that is that the lobbyists who didn't make out as well on the sequester bill. In other words, the lobbyists who didn't get their contracts funded under the sequester, they're going under cybersecurity. In other words, if they if they have a program that protects computers, government computers, against hacking, like in Homeland Security or whatever, they're not only getting money, they're getting a lot more money. This is a big go-go industry among the lobbyists, because this is where they can see, you know, they can go to Congress and get almost much, as much money as they want for their clients. So,
well, and the tragedy here in the context of the show today is this, that there's been a decade of services to women, children, rural areas, healthcare services of all kinds.
Yes.
There's been a decade of serial cuts. So this is already an underfunded part of our world. And it's, and the successful ones are lean, mean service delivery machines, you know, and you just got to put your hat, you know, tip your hat to them. And so then something as arbitrary as the sequester happens. And it's like saying all things are equally abusive, all things are equally whatever. And as long as there was someone to blame for it, you know, this kind of legislation went through. And to me, it is, you know, what's Congress's approval rating right now? Like 11% and dropping? It's like,
yes.
Yeah,
9%. They could tolerate 11% and dropping approval rating, that means there's some other constituency that is approving of what's going on here. That in itself is, maybe it's circumstantial evidence, as they might say on one of the TV crime dramas, but it is evidence, and it does make us turn your head and look and say, why are we tolerating cash over votes? And it's painfully clear in these areas, not only of delivery of services to women and children, but also on the flip side, you know, that's where the money's not going. The place the money is going is to places that are going to, like, are to candidates to be elected, rather, who are going to talk about penetrating ultrasounds and, you know, how many hoops can you jump through before you can get women's health care. And so this is why I'm encouraging people to attend the virtual town hall this Sunday and talk about election reform.
This is a very timely, this is a very, very timely thing. And I couldn't agree more with what you said. The big interests have money. The public interest has no money. All they have is people, and they lose out.
Well,
the budget negotiations, and it's a very and with women's issues and everything else, it's a crime.
The alternative here is that the public interest has to hire lobbyists,
and I don't see how they have to pay the lobbyists. The lobbyists have to make the campaign contributions.
Right,
that's going to take a lot of money.
Right. You can lobby all you want, but if there's no money behind your efforts, that it means nothing today. As a matter of fact, when I went to lobby day a year ago with the coffee party, I saw all three members of my congressional delegation and, you know, told them what coffee party was about, blah, blah, blah. And in the end, I said, now, that's who we are. That's what we want. What can we do for you? Mm-hmm. And the answer from all three independently was this. Free me from fundraising. Free me from the daily chore of raising money for the next campaign. Because every day, this is on their mind. And so I thought that was brilliantly honest.
And
I want to comply with that request. So I'll tell you what, we have one caller left and we have 5 minutes left. Is it okay if I move on now, Bob?
Okay, go ahead. I want to ask you about something else, but go ahead. We'll get to that.
Do it quickly. If you can ask me quickly, and then I'm going to move on.
I know the one of the initiatives the coffee party is trying to develop this year is the Adelson Initiative to raise super PAC funds to fight for the public interest, and I'm wondering if there's anything new on that front.
Well, you know, I would come to the town hall on Sunday, or listen to the. Yeah, I don't know if it's on Blog Talk or Maestro, but come to the town hall on Sunday. We will talk about all of that. Thanks so much for your call, Bob.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So our last caller for the day is going to be area code 518. Oops, you just missed. It jumped. All right, 518. You're on Legend Cloud.
Yes, all right.
Oh, yes.
Joe Pomponio, Albany, New York.
Thank
I know you don't
calling,
have much
Joe.
Time left. I've got a bit going on here. So the Violence Against Women Act finally passed. Now,
yes.
A lot of people are taking vows for it, and they deserve to. I watched the signing live on TV. That bill got through because of us. I can't tell you how many petitions I've been signing, how many phone calls I've made or messages I've gotten. Okay? So that's a pat on the back for all of us as well as the people that worked on it. It does give me hope that if we pressure them, they are finally going to start to listen. Now, the next one up is going to be the gun safety bills. They're going through now. Okay? I bring this up
yes.
in conjunction with Planned Parenthood. Okay? We have a new budget coming. If we put pressure on them, the amount of money that goes into Planned Parenthood compared to the money they waste throughout the whole budget, it's a joke. If enough people can realize the good that Planned Parenthood does and put aside, pardon me for putting it this way, their religious problems, okay, we can get a lot done. I'm quite sure things can be done to rectify that situation, but to leave women without that type of care, okay, is a complete absurdity.
Yes, yes. It is. It certainly puts the haves and the have-nots on opposite ends of the spectrum, doesn't it?
That's one area of it. My personal feeling is they want to have haves and have-nots. They want to
yes.
have an aristocracy and serfs. And not as long as I'm alive and I can speak against them. But, yeah, this is one area they're moving in. There's a war against children. There's a war against middle class. There's a war against education. All these things do not do the majority of us any good. It serves a purpose of a handful. And I'm making an observation, right? If
yes.
they're able to achieve control, that's what I believe they want. And I can't let them have it.
Right, and thank you for your activism, Joe. It's so important, the petitions, the calls, the faxes, the postcards, they're all tools in our arsenal. And we, the people, must speak, and we must vote. And that's key items. Joe, thank you so much for your call today. I'm going to have to close the show now, but thank you, as always, for your input.
You're welcome.
So, this is my minute or two to let you know that Lunch with Loudon, as wonderful as it may be, is not the only Coffee Talk Radio show available to you. On Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, you can listen to Egberto Willis on Politics Done Right. Mondays at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, Don Aronson has a show, Press 1 for Democracy. And Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, conservative Michael Charney and progressive Eric Beiler host The Middle Ground. I want to remind you one more time that there will be a virtual town hall for Coffee Party folks, members and followers, to discuss election reform with Coffee Party founders Annabelle Park and Eric Beiler. Come to join the Coffee Party movement on Facebook to get that the time, place, link, blah, blah, all of that. Last but not least, Coffee Party USA is a most complete grassroots organization funded totally by our members. Citizens United has not benefited us. If you like the show or anything you see Coffee Party doing, become a member by going to www.coffeepartyusa.com, join the movement, become a member, click, 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 and there you are. It's time to renew You'll get an email reminding you, please, renew, renew generously. We appreciate everything you do. So from the foothills of the Cascade of the Coast Range in Oregon, and we're Portlandia, this is Janine and Debbie Lynn saying, coffee party on.